supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. A couple of months ago, the Learning Lab here at WHYY provides hands-on media training to students. They told us about a project they were working on with some inner-city teens who were part of an organization called Episcopal Community Services. Anyway, ECS works with teens and their families that come from a world of drugs, gangs, and hopelessness and homelessness to help them rise above their challenges and survive and even thrive. These teens have shown a remarkable ability to transform their lives in the face of this adversity. So the question arises, what are some of the challenges they've faced? And more important, what have they done to overcome them or get through them or live with them? With us today are two of these notable teens who will share their stories and tell us how the pressures of the street transformed into pressures to succeed. We'll hear in a couple of minutes from Dana Young and Leah Savage. But also with us here in the studio is Munir Smith. He's the teen vocation coordinator with Episcopal Community Services in Philadelphia and knows these young ladies quite well. We'll also be joined on the telephone by Dr. Ann Mastin. She's a distinguished McKnight University professor at the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota, who studies resilience among youth. And hopefully we will hear from you today on the show. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Thanks to all of you for joining us on today's show. Dana, let's start with you. You were a small child when your mother got involved in drugs, and when you were 13, you were evicted and wound up in a shelter. Can you tell us what your life was like those days?
Well, it was strange because that was like my first time being, like, I lived around my old way, but it was just being in a different area. And I didn't really want any of my friends to know that I lived in a shelter. So me and my brother, we kind of like hid whenever we saw them. And it was just, I guess we really wanted to strive and do better because we didn't want to end up in a shelter when we got older.
What happened when the kids found out you were living in a shelter? Did they find out?
Yeah, they did. Well, some of them treated us different and some of them didn't. Like the ones that were our true friends, they didn't treat us any different. But the ones that was just, you know, in it for popularity, they basically just made fun of us and, I guess, I don't know. They were just looking for something.
So you were ashamed that you were living in a shelter?
Mm-hmm. Because it just made me, like, feel different.
Is that when you were aware that your life was different? Was that the first time?
Yeah, that was the first time that I realized that, I guess, that I was on a different path and I had to do more, it seemed, to reach, you know, where other people was at.
And that couldn't have been your first thought when you wound up in a shelter and realized that you were different. Well, what was it like early on?
Early on it was just, because the shelter was crowded, so, and there was a lot of people, a lot of fights, a lot of people didn't like certain people. So it was just like basically trying to go to school and trying to, you know, escape the pressures of being in a shelter, trying not to fit in with certain crowds, and I don't know, it was just hard.
Did that kind of instability in the shelter, did that affect the way you saw the world? I mean, this is an age where kids are just starting to figure out how the world works, you know? Mm-hmm. Did it affect the way you saw the world?
Yeah, it just seemed like you either going somewhere, like, if you don't do the right thing, you're going to end up, I guess, in a shelter or in some other bad situation.
Did it affect the way you saw yourself? Like, how did you feel about Dana Young back then?
I don't know. I just felt like maybe I'm supposed to I'm supposed to be somebody, but it was just seemed like it was harder trying to be somebody from shelter.
Did you expect something bad to happen to you? I mean, you were surrounded with people that bad things happened to.
No, I didn't expect anything bad to happen to me.
What did you expect?
Well, inside the shelter, we had a lot of people that cared about us, and some people that were just in it for the paycheck, so it's just, I guess we expected.
And you could tell at that age?
Mm-hmm, you could tell.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty easy to do. Who were you in the shelter with?
My mom, my brother, and just me.
Were you mad at your mother?
No, I guess she did what she had to do. It was better than us living on the streets.
Yeah, that's true. But you didn't know that when you were 13, or did you?
Yeah, I knew that.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Was your brother mad at your mother?
He probably was. I don't know.
Yeah. I know. I have to ask him, right?
Yeah.
We're going to hear from him a little bit later in the show.
Okay.
Our associate producer, Lisa Walters, interviewed him, and we're going to play some of that back and get to know him a bit. Leah,
all right.
Let's get to know you a little bit. When you were 4 years old, your mother died of cancer, and you and your siblings, many siblings, mm-hmm. were taken over by
DHS.
Thank you. Do you remember any of that when you were 4 years old?
No, not really. I remember the day that they came and took us to our grandma's house. My mom was still 11 then.
You remember that day?
Yes, I remember that day.
I see you rolling your eyes. Tell us about that day.
Well, at the time, when they did come and get us, it was just me and my little sister there. I don't remember where my brothers or my other sister was at. So my other sister had came and was like, we're going to go live with grandma. So me being 4, you know, I love my grandma's house. So I'm thinking, oh, we just going to go stay the night, whatever. Then from then on, I don't know what else happened. I just remember I was living with my grandma.
Well, your grandmother adopted you, yes?
Well, when I hit 16, I told I didn't want to be adopted, so she just got temporary custody of me, but she adopted my little sister.
Things didn't go so well for you or your grandmother.
No.
Yeah. Give us some detail. What happened?
Well, I saw it as though it is, she liked my little sister better, and she treated me and my other brother differently.
How?
She'll buy my little sister all this other type of stuff. She'll take my little sister all these other places, and me and my brother was sort of kind of just left in the cold, and we had to fend for ourselves. So, truthfully, when I got to about the age of 13, I started being rebellious.
What did that look like?
Ugly. She'll tell me to do things, and I wouldn't do it, or I stayed on punishment, like, for a whole 3 years, on and off. And then it just started getting ugly. I could tell how she really didn't like me that much.
She didn't like you?
I could tell when someone
What was it like living with an adult, your only caretaker, who didn't like you?
We kind of stayed out of each other's way. I would get up, go to school, don't come back until I have to go to sleep.
Were you lonely? Were you scared? Were you angry?
Like,
what was it like to be you back then?
Wow. I wasn't lonely because I always had friends. I had my brothers, my sisters. No, I wasn't angry as much. No, not really.
Did you have any grown-ups who believed in you back then?
Well, my mom's sister, her name was Kelly. She became like a second mother to me. I had two godmothers and my other grandma and my dad mom.
I wonder if all your difficulties with your grandmother made you miss your mom even more?
Yes, it did. And then it's just everyday experience.
What do you mean?
Like, when people say, oh, I'm going this place with my mom, or I'm doing this with my mom, or, like, I can't say that.
Same question I asked Dana. Did you feel different than the other kids?
I always feel different than the other kids. They fortunate enough to have their parents. I mean, even when I lost my mom, I still didn't have a father. I mean, he didn't die or anything. He was just never there until recently.
Even after she died?
Mm-hmm.
Dana, what about your dad?
Well, my dad, he was around when I was born, I guess, and then he just disappeared. So I never grew up with my dad. He would visit like once every 4 years.
Do you know him now?
No. Barely. I just know his name, how he looks sometimes.
Leah, what about your dad? You said he's back in the picture.
Well, actually, I had to seek him out. Because of the fallouts I was having with my grandma, you know, she done put me out twice or so. So
how old were you?
I was 16 and 17 when she put me out. So the second time she put me out, she sent me to go live with my grandma, and that's my dad's mother. So my grandma wanted me to become close with my dad. So I started a relationship with him. I started talking to him. I came to seek him out, and I saw that as kind of funny as though, because I'm your youngest child, and it's a shame that I had to come find you instead of you coming to build a relationship with me.
Well, when you said funny, you don't mean funny.
No, not funny, but kind of messed up.
Messed up funny. Yeah. How do you feel about him?
I don't know. We're growing right now. I mean, we have problems. Of course, we're going to have problems, but we're on an okay level.
Tell me about your siblings. You've got a lot of siblings. Five.
Yeah, on my mom's side, I have five. I have my older sister, Chanel. She helps me through a lot. My other older sister, Sade. My brother, Matthew. Then it's me. There's my little sister, Tracy, and my little brother, Michael, that I barely see.
I promised Dana and our listeners that we're going to hear a clip from your brother. Let's take a look at, take a listen anyway to his perspective on what life is like, because it's rarely identical for two siblings. So let's give a listen. Our associate producer, Lisa Walters, spoke with Devin about how life has been for him. Let's listen.
I was born into this world not knowing the consequences I was going to face. That's the thing, you're just born to live and you're bred to die. At the age of 3, I was like a church boy. My mom just took me to church, me and my sister, every single Sunday. And that's when it was good when I was younger. Until my mom got into the wrong business with a few of her guy friends. And after that, just went downhill. My mom did drugs. We always got kicked out of houses. I had to live with my grandma for so long. I always exchanged schools from time to time. I never got to settle down. I was always on the move, so I could never sit down in life. I always have to be out and active. And I've been in shelter like 3 times, and my brother was abusive.
So how do you feel like you've overcome these challenges that you faced and these situations that you've been exposed to in your life?
I feel as though I overcame most of them, but not all of them. I always take it up with God and see what I could do to forgive my brother, but it's hard. But besides that, I didn't overcome the habits with my mom because it still goes on, but I cope with it by just not acknowledging it, pretending that it's not happening around me, even though it really is, but I just don't want to face facts.
What's your support system been like?
It's a shame what I'm about to say, but my role model and my support figure was my best friend, Tracy. When I seen his initiative and his drive and that nothing could bring him down, he was just really diligent, even though he wasn't a good figure or a good role model. But at that time, I just looked deeper through the core and seen what drives him. And it's just that the urge for him to want more. And my sister, Dana, she went through this with me. So me and her, we bonded really, really tight. It's like I look at her as my mom because she would always care for me and tend for me in moments of adversity and when stuff would just be hard and I couldn't do it myself. And I would look after her because she was shy. So I would be like her mouth. I would always talk for her. And it was just my sister and my best friend, Tracy. And the things that helped me overcome it, like the question you asked earlier, is just inside I'm really hurting is all I can say. But outside, I don't want the world to let, I don't want the world to know that I was brought down from something like this. So I just always think positive and try to be nice.
That was Dana. I'm sorry. That was Devin, Dana's brother, talking about his life and the great adversity he's lived with. He, of course, is Dana Young's brother. Dana, what was it like listening to that?
It was like I don't know exactly how he feels. Even like so, it was like more insightful. Now I know everything he feels, and it's just hearing it from a different point of view, and it lets me see, I guess, how he dealt with things. Because he mostly dealt with it himself. He never really talks to anybody himself. He just normally, he has friends he talks to. He just, I don't know. I never knew exactly how he felt, so it felt weird.
Did it make you feel sad, tender, closer to him?
Yeah, it did. It made me feel closer to him because he talked about how I was like sort of like a role model to him. Yeah. And that's something I never knew, so.
He said he was hurting on the inside, but he didn't show it on the outside. Yeah. You?
Yeah, I am.
Leah?
Yes, a little.
Yeah. I can't imagine you're not hurting on the inside. And, you know, I can't imagine after what you've been through. Nevertheless, despite what you've been through, you're both doing remarkably well anyway. So when we come back after a short break, we're going to talk with you a little bit more, but we're going to hear from Muneer Smith about the program, about what helps kids, what really helps kids, and we're going to hear from Professor Ann Mastin, because what you are doing is really called resilience. You know, it's about the skills you need to bounce back from adversity. So we're going to be back in a minute. To our listeners, if you want to join the conversation, we are talking about resilience and overcoming adversity. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're talking about resilience today. You've heard from Dana Young and Leah Savage, two teens who they met through Episcopal Community Services. We'll also hear, when we come back, from Muneer Smith. He's a social worker at that program, and like I said, Professor Ann Mastin, who specializes in resilience. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on 91 FM, WHYY.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY and announces the opening of a comprehensive women's cancer center this summer. The Women's Cancer Center builds on Fox Chase's expertise in breast and gynecologic cancers. Fox Chase cares for the entire person, physically, psychologically, and socially. Services include education, screening, family risk assessment, and a full range of treatment options. Details at foxchase.org. Fox Chase, perfecting the science of compassionate cancer care.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Gretchen Peters. She says if Americans really want to stop the Taliban in Afghanistan, we have to focus on the flourishing opium trade, which nets the extremists up to $500 million a year. Her new book is Seeds of Terror, How Heroin is Bankrolling the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about resilience, overcoming adversity. We've been talking with Dana Young and Leah Savage, two young people who, I hate to use the word, have overcome adversity, have lived through and with great adversity and seem to be doing well regardless. I'm joined on the phone by Professor Ann Mastin. She's a distinguished McKnight University professor at the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota. Ann Mastin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I'm also joined here in the studio by Muneer Smith. He's a social worker at Episcopal Family Services. Muneer, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Well, we heard quite a story in our last segment about two young women and a young man who've gone through quite a lot. Muneer, let me start with you. The young people we featured on today's show are obviously resilient ones.
Absolutely.
When people come into your program, do you have a sense of who is resilient when they come in?
Well, not really. I mean, they show themselves as we go along in the program, but for the most part, I look at all of our teens that we work with as being resilient because my program is called Fast Housing, my other program that I work with at ECS. And in that program, we get families who have been chronically homeless, and we put them in permanent housing. So a lot of our teens have experienced homelessness. But when they come into our programs, they don't bring anything that they might be feeling inside. They don't bring that to our Saturday programs.
What do you mean they don't bring it? How can they not bring it?
What I mean by that is they come in and we work on a project. We've been working on a documentary, a short documentary based on the lives of Philadelphia teens. And when they come in on Saturdays, they come in with the attitude of doing the project, working as a team, and basically getting the project done. So any other things, I know, as we heard, they experience adversity. They might be experiencing adversity right now. So part of what my job is to provide the social support for the teens if they are going through anything. But for the most part, they come in with upbeat attitudes. They work hard. And that's been basically the story of our program.
It's more than social supports, although they're necessary. And Mastin, what are some of the factors that you've identified that contribute to resilience?
Well, it's been interesting listening because I'm hearing some of those factors in the stories of these young people and also in the program. At the top of the list would be relationships with caring people. And we've heard how sometimes those people can be found in the family, if not, you know, with missing fathers or mothers who either die or are, you know, having troubles of their own, that grandmothers or aunts or other relatives can step in and help out. We've also heard how young people can get a sense of support from each other, brothers and sisters in the family, and also from their friends. And I'm thinking that in this program that the participating young people are getting a chance to work together with wonderful adult role models who are caring people and giving them all kinds of opportunities to have a chance to be effective. That's a very important part of resilience, that kids and young adults have a chance to do things and feel effective. It gives them a sense of hope and optimism.
It really is about a kind of power. I mean, we psychologists call it locus of control, but it's really a sense that, you know, is the outside controlling our lives, or do we have a sense of control over our own lives too?
Right. It goes by many words: empowerment, self-efficacy, self-confidence. But it's very important that people have a sense that they can be effective in the world, that people get a kick out of doing things and doing them well. We experience pleasure in accomplishing things. And I think it's very important that this program provides both those kinds of opportunities and also, you know, adult mentors and connections that, and also connections with other young people who are, you know, similarly joining together to do something positive. And I think that gives these folks a chance to, you know, continue to have hope in the future, to build real practical skills, and to develop their optimism.
One of the issues that you're touching on, and that the Saturday program that Muneer mentioned, is about having meaning in one's life, to think you can have an impact on the world. And that's, you know, that's an issue that goes across the lifespan. As people age, their greatest fear in life is not death, but losing meaning in their lives.
I would agree. I think that as we learn about resilience, there's been a lot more research actually on children and adolescents than there has been on older adults. That's changing now. But I think that the most important protective factors are the kind that extend over the lifespan. They just take on a different form as you get older. You know, close relationships are always important when you're a young child. It may be the people taking care of you. As you grow older, it's friends and romantic partners. But, you know, relationships are always important for resilience. Similarly, I think having a sense of hope and meaning in life is important, and that is different in a very young child than it is in a teenager or an older adult. But I agree that having a sense of hope is important, and sometimes that can come from the security of a family. Sometimes it comes from spirituality and religious connections, and sometimes it comes from, you know, the experience of meaningful work and taking care of your own family.
Muneer, tell us about the young people you meet through these programs. Of course, I don't need to know specifics, but I would imagine that by the time they get to you, some of them are pretty burnt out and streetwise, and, you know, Anne talked about hope. I would imagine an awful lot of them don't have any hope.
Yes, that's very true. And I think part of the job of a case manager is not only to make sure that services are provided and services are being referred to, but I think it's also a matter of being encouraging to the young people. That's one of the things that we do. The program is actually called Teens Taking Over, and I think the main concept behind that title is that teens have a voice. We actually surveyed the teens at the end of the program, and we asked them a basic question: do you feel that your ideas and your concerns are being considered? And we got 100% yes to that question.
I want to turn to Dana for a minute. When you were young, 13 years old, did you have hope for your future?
I didn't really have that much hope because, like, there wasn't that much support. There were people that believed in me, but there wasn't that many people that helped me.
Do you have hope now?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
I have a lot more, like, in school, I have more of a support base. I have a lot more people that believe in me and that want to help me. I have a couple mentors in my school, and my mom, she's there.
Leah?
Mm-hmm.
Can you
repeat the question?
Pardon?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. When all this started, when you were younger, did you have hope for the future?
No, not really, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do in the future.
How about now?
Yes, I have hope.
Yeah?
Yes.
What changed?
I figured out what I wanted to do in life, and I see that in my eyes. I didn't need support because I believed in myself. So because I believed in myself, I see as though I could do anything I put my mind to.
Anne, I want to turn back to you. Do you think everyone has a spark of resilience that can be cultivated, or is it genetic? Some people have more than others.
Well, I think that there's a lot of what I call ordinary magic in the lives of everyone, or potentially. And what I mean by that is simply that from what I've learned, and along with others over a couple decades now of research, is that what makes for resilience is not anything rare. It's part of what we do as humans, but it doesn't just come from within a person. It comes from relationships and supports. And you've heard from these young people, from all three of them, from Dana and Devin and Leah, that, you know, they do now feel a sense of self-confidence. You can hear it in their voices, but that they also have made use of a lot of resources and supports along the way. Some they found in this program. They've mentioned finding it in their own family, in brothers, sisters, friends, in teachers, and so forth. So I believe that it's part of human nature to, you know, be motivated to be effective in the world, to respond well to positive relationships and that sort of thing. But this has to be nurtured. It doesn't flourish unless, you know, these qualities are supported. If we don't have, if children don't have adults that they can count on and a sense of security that comes with that, it's hard to hold on to hope throughout childhood. And similarly, if young people don't have the chance to, you know, be successful, to do things and work with other people and have doors open for them, it's much harder for them to persist in holding on to their beliefs that they can make a good future. So I think it's partly there for us to support and partly has to be nurtured over time.
I'm curious. You did a 20-year study with children. You followed kids over 20 years, and you looked at resilience in their lives. What did you find? What was the difference between the kids who were more or less resilient?
We found all along the way that the young people who showed good functioning, you know, were turning out well in all the ways we would hope for people of different ages at school, at work, in their relationships and so forth, that they it was very simple. They had more resources. They had more internal resources that had been supported and developed, like they were good thinkers, and I could hear the thoughtfulness of these young people mm-hmm. as they were speaking. They also had a knack for taking advantage of and responding to opportunities when they came along. And they also had or were able to make good connections with positive adult role models. Sometimes they found them in the family, and sometimes it was a while until they encountered those role models. Mm-hmm. We found that some of the people in our study bloomed early. They had lots of resources early on, and they were doing well despite a lot of adversity from the beginning of the time we met them. But we found that there were other young people in our study who kind of went off track for a while in adolescence that didn't have enough support during what is normally a pretty challenging transition, but particularly so in early adolescence if you don't have the kind of support you need. If there are no fathers and mothers that can, you know, help you through this, if you fall in with a group of friends that's getting into trouble, we still found that there were late bloomers, that there were young people who went off track and they got back onto a really positive track as they made their way out of their teenage years into early adulthood. And again, it was them first realizing they wanted to change direction.
Well,
so they realized it, and then they found supporters who helped them.
You talk about late bloomers. I have worked with people across the life cycle, and you know, all I have is anecdotal evidence, but I've worked with very, very, very late bloomers, you know, substance abusers who get sober when they're 40 years old and are able to change their lives around. I'm curious, that this is a bit of a different direction, but there's a lot of research about many kids in this generation, privileged kids, who have lots of resources, who are, when they graduate high school and college, they're less resilient than their predecessors.
This is an interesting area of work, and one of my colleagues, Sonia Luther, has done research on really the topic of risk in very advantaged young people, because I think it's important not to mistake financial resources and kind of on-the-surface-looking resources with the kind of emotional supports and opportunities that really foster positive development. So it's not always easy to figure out who has that kind of emotional support and meaning in their life. And I think some of the kids who are growing up in very advantaged families actually may have some kinds of deprivation that is emotional and relational. Their parents, for example, may be very successful but gone all the time.
Right, right. So the way things look are not always the way things are. Muneer, I want to come back to you and talk about the issue of school. This is a critical domain for all kids, of course, a source of support and a source of for injury for many kids. When we talk about kids from economically depressed neighborhoods, it's pretty complicated and often dangerous to succeed in school. There's a lot of shame about being successful.
It is. I'm glad you brought that point up. I think the foundation of resiliency for a lot of our young people is there because they're growing up in Philadelphia. I think a basic concept of resiliency has to be in place to you know, grow up in the inner city in Philadelphia. That's why I think our program is important to engage youth and to channel their creative energy because, like you said, in schools where many of the art and music programs have been eliminated, the resources for creative energy are just not out there. And so that's what we see for a lot of our young people. We kind of ask them, what brings you back to our program? And a lot of times they say, I mean, we have a voice here. Like you were talking about, there's caring adults here that can help, you know, create our vision, basically, for our future. So
yeah, those cutbacks are devastating. And,
absolutely.
And more than many know, they're devastating, they're dangerous. It's in those creative arts programs, you're right, where kids find a voice. And without a voice, there's not a lot of potential for hope.
Absolutely.
We're going to come back after a short break. We're going to talk with all four of you about what you have done, what the future looks like, and things we can all do as community to help foster the resilience and hopefully make the world a little bit better. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about resilience for these children, for all our children. The children in the studio right now are Dana Young and Leah Savage. They're two teens who met through Episcopal Community Services and have lived through a great deal of adversity. I'm also joined by Muneer Smith. He's a social worker at Episcopal Family Services and has been involved in helping these wonderful young people. Professor Ann Mastin is on the phone with me. She's a distinguished McKnight University professor at the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Now through May 31st, the 108th Annual Student Exhibition features over 1,000 works of art by the Academy's Bachelor of Fine Arts, Certificate, and MFA students. Works showcase a variety of styles from painting and printmaking to drawing and sculpture. For more details about the annual student exhibition, the number is 215-972-7600 or online at pafa.org.
Movies, the final frontier. While the rest of the economy lags, the box office is booming. Hollywood is banking on a big summer, thanks to sci-fi action from the Transformers, Terminator, and of course, Star Trek.
Who are you?
I'm with him.
He's with me.
We are traveling at warp speed. How did you manage to beam aboard this ship?
Boldly going back to the movies next time on Tell Me More. This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about resilience. What constitutes resilience? What helps some people overcome great adversity while others don't? My guests are Muneer Smith. He's a social worker at Episcopal Family Services, where he has met Dana Young and Leah Savage. They join us here in the studio. They're two teens affiliated with that program. They're also participating in WHYY's Learning Lab. I'm also joined on the phone by Professor Ann Mastin. She's a distinguished McKnight professor at the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota. And what programs have you come across in your studies of research that help foster resilience, a feeling of self-efficacy?
Well, you know, I think there have always been community programs which attempt to do that. And what's happening recently is that people are trying to do research on mentoring programs, on early childhood intervention programs, and so forth, to demonstrate that not only are these programs effective, provide evidence of that, but also that they work because they mobilize these very fundamental protections for human development, that, you know, they work by creating or engaging these powerful systems for creating hope and motivation to go in a positive direction. They create positive relationships that give people a sense of security and optimism. They help kids learn very specific and all kinds of different varieties of effective tools for either learning or for doing things out there in the world that can give them a sense of satisfaction.
Well, let's see how that translates. When you were describing what works, you used the word positive three times.
And right.
Joining me on the line is Dawn Garlick, who's with the Boys and Girls Club of Camden County, and their name is A Positive Place for Kids. Dawn, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me on.
So tell us about the Boys and Girls Club. How do they provide these services? You're working with kids in Camden who have lived through great adversity.
Mm-hmm. But first, if I could start, I just wanted to just say I just enjoyed listening to the teen girls who called in. I just wish them both success. They were just awesome in sharing what they've been going through, and I can hear so much hope in their lives.
Well, now that you've said that, I have to interrupt you. Because I did want to mention to both Dana and Leah that we have gotten a lot of calls since we've been on the air from young people who have thanked you for being role models. So just want you aware of it. Okay, Dawn, your turn.
Yes. Well, at the Boys and Girls Club, we have two programs in Camden City. We have two locations, our East Camden and our Parkside location. And we're blessed to have about 1,500 teenagers that come to our club. At the club, I believe that our teens share the same mindset of the other girls who called in, who are at your studio. At the club, not only do we meet their emotional needs with the caring adults, but from what I hear from the teenagers, they want to be cared for. They want to have meaning. They want to go against the stereotypes that society has labeled them with, and then how can we meet that so they can be resilient what they do?
How do you meet it? Because you know you're in a small piece of mm-hmm. their lives. They live mm-hmm. in communities and families where, you know, there's a lot of pull going in the other direction. So, what kind of programming do you have there that helps them get involved and changes their lives?
Well, we have basically four different core programmings. Our job-ready employment program, not only do our teenagers come through a training program where they're learning how to interview, they're learning about attitudes and behaviors in their school, and in the family that can transfer to the workplace, we are able to hire our teens. So this summer, a lot of our teenagers who are at the club who went through our programs, they know that once they complete the program, they do it well. With the mentors here, they have jobs, and many of our teens who graduate and come back to the Boys and Girls Club as senior counselors when they're in college, they do get hired. So knowing that the teens, they come in after school working with the younger club members, they're also mentoring the younger club members through our reading program.
Well, I hate to do this to you because I'm quite familiar with the Boys and Girls Club of Camden as I am involved. And if you were to go on talking about the wonderful programs you had, you would take another hour because there are so many. I do want to mention that the Boys and Girls Club of Camden, the Boys and Girls Clubs are a national organization and they do a great job. They're accessible, and they just do a wonderful program. So I encourage everybody to call them and to get involved. These Boys and Girls Club programs sounds very similar to yours, Manir.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole idea behind it is giving our youth something different that they're not getting out in their neighborhoods or in the streets, because as youth workers, we definitely have to compete with, you know, everything that goes on in the inner city, and it's very tough to compete with that. But I think I mean, according to our program manager, Ms. B. Fulton, we've actually had our best year so far. We've engaged about 20 to 25 youth. And we've had two different programs. Aside from the young people that are doing the project here at WHYY, we actually have another group that goes down to our main office to do vocational assessments. Mm-hmm. And basically what we're trying to do is get them excited about certain professions, to give them kind of an incentive to stay in school and to, you know, start thinking about college and things like that. So,
Leah, give us a summary of where your life is now, what your life is like, and your vision of your future.
Well, as of right now, I'm in the 12th grade. I graduate next month. I just recently went to my prom last week. I moved out of my grandma's house, and I'm living with my dad and my stepmom, my stepsister, in South Philly as of right now. In August, I'm attending Lockhaven University for mass communications and media.
You're coming after my job?
Yes, I am.
That makes me happy.
Thank you. And, you know, I'm just working to support myself and, you know, save up a little thing, everything, so, you know, when I go off to college, I won't be in debt and everything. I'm thinking smart right now. Mm.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear. I do want to mention that we did have a caller that we didn't have time to bring on, but it is about a need for foster parents. Philadelphia and Philadelphia region, all cities are in desperate need for foster parents, and if there's nothing else we've learned on this show, is that adults, caring adults, really make a world of difference, a world of difference. Dana, I want to hear about your life. And your future?
Well, my life so far is great now because of the FAST program. We have a house that we've lived in for almost 4 years. And this is my last year of high school, and I graduate next month. And I'm hoping to get into Shippensburg University because I want to go outside of Philadelphia. It's not because I don't like it, but it's just because when I went to visit the college, I found it interesting, and it just felt like, I guess, it felt like a second home to me.
Hmm. You still haven't heard whether you get in or not?
Well, no, because somebody recently sent it in.
Okay. All mm-hmm. right. Well, hopefully they're listening to the show.
Yeah.
Listen, in describing your life and your future, I know you are a bit of a poet. Would you mind reading us some of one of your poems?
Okay. The poem that I wrote is called "The War Is Over." They say the war is over, but I don't see that. They say the war is over, but I keep getting feedback. I keep getting feedback from people enraged. They say that the war is not just a stage. It's not just a stage. They say the war is over, World War I and II. But the war isn't over, it's between the streets and you. They say the war is over, but I don't see any proof. It was just as easy as tying shoes, easy to end, I'm not amused. They say the war is over, but if it is, why do I see soldiers posing as kids? They're supposed to be kids. Where is that childhood that's supposed to exist? The battle's not ours, it's supposed to be his. The war isn't over, the war isn't over. No matter how often I repeat that, I know I'm going to keep getting feedback.
That's your life.
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel like that's your future?
It just seems like that's going to be the future, I guess, if we don't stop the violence. Because if our children keep dying, how can they make more children and, you know, keep the world going?
So the question is, what about your future? What's your vision of your future? What do you want to do?
I want to be a screenwriter.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
And any sense of what either of you ladies wants to do about the kids growing up, if anything? You have a sense of that?
Well, I'm also thinking I might like want to do a be like on my own business, sort of, in a program called Young Artists that is made up, like, I'm taking my last name and putting it into like a program, call it Young Artist, and I'm thinking I might like make it like where you could take acting, you could take up poetry, writing, anything that helps you with your future, so I could just guide kids away from like all the troubles of the streets and everything and give them a place to call home, a place where they could find, where they could you know, find something they want to do when they get older.
Hmm. Leah, you want to have a family?
Of course.
Of course.
Yes, of course. I want to, when I do have my family, I mean, I want my family to be fortunate enough to have a better life than I did growing up and everything.
And I want that also. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. You were wonderful. Dani Young and Leah Savage, teens affiliated with Episcopal Community Service. Maneer Smith, thank you.
Thank you.
He's a social worker with Episcopal Family Services. And thank you to Ann Mastin, a distinguished McKnight professor at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for your research. During their time at WHYY Learning Lab, all of the teens have produced and directed their own documentaries on what Philadelphia means to them. There's going to be a live screening of all of them in June. Check out the trailer for it at our site, whyy.org/91fm/voices. Next week on Voice. Oh, and by the way, my blog tomorrow at philly.com/askdan is also about resilience. We're going to be talking with a Holocaust survivor about that type of resilience. Well, next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to discuss the new world of digital psychotherapy, speaking of my blog and web chats. We're going to be talking about that and what the implications are. Well, if you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org, and you can listen to archived edition of our show at whyy.org. You can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is the executive producer of radio content at WHYY. Our executive producer is Mike and Scott. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons. Alisa Walters is our associate producer. Our intern? Well, that's Jonathan Glick. Me? I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends.
Cloudy.